This is a No Dogma podcast. I'm Brian Hogan. Today I'm joined by Mark Eisenberg of Microsoft, a self-described cloud and mobile visionary. Thanks for joining me, Mark.
Good to be here.
I've known you for a while, and something that's come up a few times is sort of a, I suppose you'd call it an obsession with the definition of private clouds.
Yeah, it's been going on for a while. You know, right out of the gate, we got into this whole concept of everybody having their definition of the cloud. And I've watched for the last 5 years, I've been around the Microsoft Azure world for 5 or 6 years now. I guess it's coming up on 6 years. And we very casually just, we were fine with everybody creating their own definition. And this led directly to a distinction being made between public clouds and private clouds. And if you actually read the NIST definition, and I was looking at the brand new ISO definition that was published within the last few months, and they're very much in alignment. A private cloud only differs from a public cloud in who owns it and who has access to it. It's really more who has access to it. A single business entity, or a single entity really, has access to those resources and nobody else does. The multi-tenancy even still exists in the definition, and that different lines of business or business units within that entity would all share the same cloud. And this is really important in terms of how you get the benefits of cloud in the enterprise. I even heard an executive on stage at the TechEd show make a sweeping statement that public clouds are homogeneous and private clouds are heterogeneous. This is how disconnected it was. And I think this is rooted in the enterprise belief that a private cloud is a virtualized data center. And that is doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of how you get the benefit of cloud in the enterprise.
So, but are you saying that they just view it like a bunch of computers in a rack that they happen to have control of, but they don't have a physical, they don't have to physically have them in a place that they can access?
The enterprises actually do tend to view it more as enterprise, as data centers that they control.
Okay.
You know, private means private. Nobody yeah. else can get to it, right? With which, you know, all of the myths that go with how secure those data centers actually are. But which is, that's the feeling, that's the psychology of it, is if I have control of the facility that those servers are in, then I have control of what happens to them. And, you know, one hack after another, we know that that is actually not true.
So you're obviously saying that's not the correct approach.
Definitely. Not in terms of getting value from
cloud
computing. Yep. And we've done this for many decades now. A new thing comes along. Humans don't really care for change.
No.
So we start to redefine it. And in cloud, we embrace that redefinition by acknowledging that everybody can have their own definition of it. So so the enterprise is pretty, you know, completely have redefined private cloud to mean a virtualized data center. Nothing else about the way they're being leveraged is significantly different than how they've been doing things for a few decades, and certainly not any different since VMware introduced virtualization to the enterprise data center.
So does this tend to be companies that don't have a real cloud presence, and now they just want to go with the buzzword?
Right. So your real cloud presence is in the companies like Netflix and eBay and those guys who were born into this world. And it really comes down to the difference between web scale and, or now hyperscale, and enterprise scale.
Sorry, what's hyperscale?
So I haven't investigated this, okay. But Microsoft has started to refer to hyperscale rather than web scale. I suspect that's because Google was considered to be the first web scale application out there. So maybe we're looking to differentiate it. But right now, you know, the Microsoft official language is hyperscale, but they're basically the same concept. But in the old days, enterprise scale, I mean, that was the top of the heap. You know, if you were a big bank and you had your mainframes, that was the biggest, those were the biggest applications. Those were the biggest problems you were trying to solve in computer technology. And now, you know, they're nothing compared to what Microsoft in their own data centers or Google or Amazon or any of the major cloud players are doing out there.
So if a company wants to make use of, let's say, the private cloud, what are the differences between the private and the public? Or how should they perceive the differences between the private and the public?
They should stop perceiving the differences between them. They're basically the same, other than whether you have to share a particular server in a particular rack with somebody that you don't know. So I guess it's a lot like being in a hostel. Maybe that's the psychology that they're thinking of. But from a how you get the business value out of this, you want to view them exactly the same. And I have used Netflix for 5 years now as kind of the, you know, the essential example of how you do things in the cloud. And they did it wrong first by their own admission. The first year that they were in the cloud, they learned a ton of stuff. And that put them on the forefront because they were the first ones to learn it. But those same lessons, those same techniques that they use on how you distribute your data, how you achieve resiliency, how you handle the failure of one server in the middle of your system, that all applies to enterprise problems. How you handle multi-tenancy amongst your different departments. Those are the same way that a public cloud provider handles it between their tenants. There's kind of a cool model that I've been playing around with for a few years now in that many enterprises have daytime and nighttime workloads. They deploy separate infrastructure for that. You know, if they adopted a common architecture pattern and their daytime workloads targeted the same platform that their nighttime workloads do, you just move one out and move the other in at the right time of day. You, in theory, this is extremely hypothetical, you cut your infrastructure needs in half. Now that's a cost savings that, that people could realize.
Is that different though from just auto-scaling?
Yeah, auto-scaling is if you've got an app that's got different loads on it. So, or you could, as an extreme, yes, you could auto-scale down to zero and scale the other one up. But the key is they all have to run on the same infrastructure.
Okay. So you're talking about maybe different types of applications, maybe a batch process running at night as opposed to interaction with a user during the day.
Right. And I know this is, you know, from a drawing on a whiteboard, it looks very attractive. In the real enterprise world, you know, it would take years to do that. But that's just an extreme example of how an enterprise workload that functions in the same way their business does now, but can take advantage of this, not trying to do what Netflix is doing in the enterprise, because those are different applications, they're different needs.
Is there a difference in the definition of a private and a public cloud?
Only who owns it.
Okay.
Or who has access to it, really.
But we do speak of them differently.
Yes.
And does it matter that they are spoken of differently? Or is it more for internal consumption within, let's say, the C-level executives to feel that their data is private as opposed to public?
All technology, well, probably beyond technology, but let's stay with tech. All technology change requires a cultural change. If the mindset remains the same, then you're not going to get the change. So it matters in that if you keep referring to it in the old way or thinking of it in the old way, then you're not going to adopt the new way and you will not ultimately get the benefits. People who know me know that I quote what is referred to as Einstein's definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. I've been in this business a long time. I came into it in the late 70s. Near as I can tell for my entire career and probably longer since I was a kid, we had large monolithic applications. They were not agile. They were too complex and they cost too much. Those were the problems in the 60s and in the 70s and in the 80s, so on. We come up with different ways of solving it. There's a whole lot of work or thinking that goes on in our industry about why not to do something new rather than why to do it. And so to your point, why do we need to think of it that way? Because it is different. And if we want to do things differently, we have to acknowledge those differences rather than fearing them and trying to kill them.
But that's, to be rude, that's very easy to say.
Mm-hmm.
We're two people sitting in a room. We can say that. But an organization is made up of potentially hundreds of people, all with different agendas and different goals, different budgets, different skill levels. It's very hard to roll out a change like that across an organization, even a small one. I've seen them. People, I've seen companies struggle with moving. For example, I worked for a company that struggled and fought to move. They didn't want to move to Entity Framework, Microsoft's ORM system.
Right.
It wasn't SQL. It couldn't be optimized as much. And was sort of, it was impossible to change their mindset.
Well, impossible is a strong word.
In that particular case,
in that
it
situation,
was impossible.
You couldn't, okay. No. I hear you. I do not trivialize this. That's why I find it an interesting challenge at this point in my career. And at this time where the private cloud concept has basically been completely redefined, and we need to take it back to the beginning, because I actually upset somebody in an Azure presentation I was doing one time, because I made an offhanded comment that I thought that 18 to 24 months from now, a lot of CIOs were going to look at this move to infrastructure as a service, and they were going to wonder why they did that, because they never really got the value they were expecting. And this guy whose focus was infrastructure as a service got a little upset. But I have to say, it's been somewhere between 12 and 18 months since I made that comment. And I think we're definitely reaching the next era where it's like, we're not getting the big reduction in cost that the analyst promised, because that was absolutely the wrong way to approach the cloud. It's not about cost reduction. It is about agility, improving the business agility. We're not talking about agile programming. We're talking about the business being able to respond to changing market conditions in a reasonable time frame. And you can talk to IT shop after IT shop after IT shop. Their business units are all frustrated with them because of how long it takes to get things done. And we like to hide behind the compliance story. And I don't dispute that there's a regulatory environment for many industries that we have to work with. The cloud is, there are perfectly acceptable ways to achieve those compliance needs in the cloud. But the conversation always starts with, we can't. And so to your point, there has to be an opening of the mind. There's a parallel in a completely different industry that really should have focused the mind, and that Polaroid and Kodak. Mm. Very similar players, huge players, both of them. One of them is basically dead now because they denied that the industry was changing, Polaroid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Kodak, who admittedly is a much smaller company than they were at the time, but they realized that they were, because they were basically a chemical company, and they were not going to be able to move into the future as a chemical company, and they became a digital imaging company, which is what they are today. I fear for a lot of our very successful large companies that they can continue, as you've pointed out, come up with reasons not to change until somebody else comes along, and then it's too late. Sometimes I refer to the smaller companies as proto-mammals running around in the shadow of the dinosaurs. But in this case, I do believe the dinosaurs can actually adapt and change, but they need to want to. And the cultural change is always hard on these kind of endeavors.
But some companies, as you say, like the Googles and the Netflix, they're already doing it. So who are the ones that are not doing it, the dinosaurs? Is it more like the big financials?
Yes.
But I would say, do you think it applies, though? I worked for small e-commerce companies as well. They weren't moving towards cloud. It isn't necessarily what everyone wants to do, even.
There's an interesting pattern, even in the cloud. I think the universities must be partly responsible here. There is a very common architecture pattern, usually focused on one server. When you need more performance, you make it bigger. This is what we call the vertical scaling. And that pattern is so built into how we start every project. When I was a kid, I built a little tiny Lego house, and then I just got carried away and I just started adding it. And it was huge in my mind. It was really huge because I was five. But that's the way almost every IT project I've ever seen starts. It starts small.
Yep.
To get the initial requirements done, and then we just keep piling onto it. Well, you're an architect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an architect. That is really not a way to get an 80-story building to stand up, which is what a big enterprise project is from an architecture perspective. If you don't plan it to grow like that, the cloud gives you a very, very different way to grow, and you need to adopt that. A lot of the companies that you're talking about, they start with that very traditional,
yeah,
just the small thing, and they keep piling onto it. I've been at multiple presentations in the last few months. Well, Netflix is well known. Twitter hit the wall and had to re-architect,
yeah,
everything. That's a very famous example. eBay and Amazon, I think, were much more evolutionary in their approach because it was so early in the world and the demand wasn't as great on them. I think Zynga had scaling problems, big ones. They had other challenges as well. HubSpot has been through it. The ones out in the mobile communication guys out in Waltham, drawn up like constant
communication. Constant contact?
Yeah, constant contact. Mm-hmm. I went through a presentation from their CTO. They went with the very traditional thing, the JBoss, all that stuff, and then boom, hit the wall. And they got it re-architected. We treat that as a law of nature for some reason. I happen to believe we can actually start from the beginning by saying we're going to do cloud things, and this is the way you do that. And I also don't think, because we've gotten into everything's going to the cloud, which makes an established enterprise feel like they need to change everything. They don't. They can stand a small cloud up and mandate that certain groups, because within an enterprise, a lot of lines of business actually behave more like startups. So put them in the cloud and teach them the right patterns and how they need to scale within the cloud context. And as they're successful, they'll show other lines of business. And over 3, 4, 5 years, now you've had a substantial, significant change in how you actually run your IT.
A lot of this, though, relies on the skills of people. And you've mentioned, you know, patterns and teaching people. We've had patterns and we've had courses on how to do things right for many, many years. But you and I, before we started this interview, we were talking about how many of the software projects we see are bad for one reason or another. Why would you expect anything more if you just happen to, you know, teach them the right patterns, give them the right skills, provide the right mentorship?
Well, now you're taking us off onto
a whole other... I know, but it does lead to the viability of it. It's all very well to say they should do these things right this time, but if we couldn't do them right all the other times, why can we do them right the next time?
Well, a lot of why we don't do things... Well, you've got two reasons that things aren't done right now. One is a lack of talent. You know, we're screaming that the schools need to turn out more developers. There's the whole nature versus nurture aspect of what it takes to be a developer. But you've also got the human behavior to stay entrenched in what it is you already know how to do. I have participated in conversations with very, very senior, very accomplished enterprise architects. And they will tell you with all passion that this is the way it simply has to be. And I don't know what the magic formula is for how you transition that. I'm hoping, because as things, see, it's different. 100 years ago, technology evolved at a very human pace. Mm. You could probably be born into a particular technology realm and you could work most of that realm for your entire life and then retire.
And you become the expert in it, right, and there's
exactly.
Nothing you wouldn't know about.
Right, and you don't need to change what it is because that's still useful. Well, the cycle time now has become so compressed that that's really not an option. There's a movement, you know, we say would every high school kid needs to know how to program. A kid coming out of high school today, my personal prediction is, will not be in that career. If they learn how to program, if that's what they decide to do with their lives, I don't think it lasts 2 decades at the speed we're going. Computers are going to go in a radically different direction because the complexity is increasing at a point where the old techniques just don't work anymore. We couldn't build, and go back to my example about an 80-story skyscraper. The Romans had some very accomplished building methods. Those methods don't work for an 80-story skyscraper. Is just that simple. And that's really the realm that we're in. In fact, that's probably way off on magnitude as to the challenges that we face today versus even 20 years ago.
To go back to, we had a sort of a plan for our discussion, so I'll just bring us back to that track. What is the current state of the private cloud implementation?
I think it's reached the point where it's basically irrelevant. I was having lunch with one of my clients one day and he goes, we have a private cloud. And I couldn't help myself. I went, no, you don't. It was just their virtualized data center with an optimized portal. But there's the private cloud in the enterprise today has basically been in the realm of the infrastructure experts. You know, they've stood it up. It looks this concept that this executive who said public clouds are homogeneous, private clouds are heterogeneous. That was because we've taken the heterogeneous data centers that are enterprise data centers today and then redefined them as private cloud. So, of course, they look heterogeneous, but you can't do anything in a heterogeneous environment that's cloud-like. You know, spinning up a VM, number one, we could do that before. There's nothing new there. The fact that you might go to a different web portal or go to a web portal, which, by the way, was part of VMware's original vision 10 years ago, that there would be a web portal and there would be stock images, and the developer needs a machine. He goes to the portal and spins it up, boom, done. So that's not a new idea. The how you do what Netflix does, which is run with very small building blocks, and then as your demand increases, you just add them in parallel, horizontally, to get more capacity, the same way that your storage has to work. You know, creating a bottleneck, at the data tier, which is what we all wind up doing using the traditional techniques, and then we just need to make our SQL servers bigger and bigger and bigger and more expensive. One of my favorite stories there was a company that did image management for real estate, and they had 20 terabytes of image data in a SQL server and were upset with the cost. I was like, there are other ways to store images than in a SQL server. And they were high-res images, too. So that's a great example of taking a new problem and solving it with old techniques. So to your question about the state of private cloud today, it's basically been successfully redefined as a virtualized data center. We're not getting any significant value out of it. The enterprises really are kind of struggling with how to get into the public cloud. And that's probably a conversation for a different day, but there are various levels of challenge that they're facing in trying to do that using their legacy techniques in this new environment.
So would you say that private cloud is failing its customers, its intention?
I would say it's basically become irrelevant. It hasn't brought any of the benefits to the enterprise that were promised by the analysts. And I changed my mind about who was actually at fault of this, because I used to think the vendors were at fault. But the analysts paint a story. They get the C-suite to buy into it. Then the enterprise customers start to tell the vendors what they want. The vendors actually do try to innovate. I know this. I'm with one that does innovate. But when you show an enterprise customer, a large enterprise customer, which, you know, by Jeffrey Moore's work in Crossing the Chasm, they are not early adopters for the most part. You show them this and they're like, no, that's not what we want. We want to be able to reuse our existing skills, so it needs to look like this. Refer to the aforementioned Einstein's definition of insanity. You know, I mean, you're now, if you're reusing your existing skills, you're doing the same thing by definition. And so that's where private cloud is today. Because we got so little value out of it, I believe that there's another wave that we can go through here. And I think that Microsoft, among others, is definitely got some very interesting things to say in the private cloud space and in the years going forward. And so we're entering a new era, but we're going to have to claw through this private cloud having been discredited. You know, it's not, it will widely be considered to have been a failure. Or as I said before, irrelevant. It didn't do anything. We basically rebranded what we were already doing, and then kept going. So, of course, we got no value from it.
But oftentimes, an IT department needs a reason to have its budget. So one way of getting that budget is to say, hey, that cool cloud thing, we're doing it, but we're doing it local. Or we're doing it safe. We're doing it the way you like.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Change does require some risk. Kodak and Polaroid, again, to that example, Polaroid had so little vision and was so risk averse, they just sailed right over the cliff. I mean, that was just, you know, there was no choice. That was a mixed metaphor, sorry. but, you know, that's an example. I would like to think that, you know, large companies today want to stay competitive, want to stay in business. And whether they like it or not, their technology backbone is important. And if they keep doing it the way they're doing it, A, they can't keep up with their competitors, and B, it's going to continue to get more and more expensive. I'm not saying there isn't a cost problem with infrastructure in IT today or in enterprise IT today. What I'm saying is that you've got two ways to do that. You can reduce your costs, or you can improve your revenue, what you're making. And IT needs to work on both of those realms. The homogeneous aspect of private cloud actually has a lot of promise for reducing costs. But as I've stood in front of many rooms and said, the value of cloud computing was not taking a gnarly mess in your data center and making it a gnarly mess in my data center. And that's where we're at, pretty much. Except we just left the gnarly, for private cloud, we just left the gnarly mess in place and called it something different.
So if you were given the role of being the visionary for a company in that mess, mm-hmm. what would be your way out of that?
Just what I was describing before. That first, develop the understanding of what cloud is about. How has Netflix been able to do what it does? To keep going back to the same example. Then how do we develop an evolutionary approach to introduce this into the company?
But if we were to ask you for concrete steps, company doesn't have the skills, you're the visionary, you're going to set the goal. How do you bring in the correct skills to actually make the steps forward?
So any vendor that's producing a real private cloud already has those skills.
Okay.
Okay. And they will be glad to partner with you and share those skills. I worded that very carefully.
Yes.
And so you need to make sure that the vendor is actually doing a private cloud, not something that is called a private cloud, but is still fundamentally the same thing. So they will partner with you. They will share that with you. There are many people in this industry, consultants, who understand how to do this. And you can bring them in to help you to get you started, as we do with any new methodology. There are people who can help you for real. There are a lot of companies that we call it cloud washing in the industry. They say whatever they're doing, and they call it cloud, and that's now. But you do it for real. And then here's the most important part. The executive leadership of the company must fully stand behind it. Microsoft is an example, and actually Amazon is an example as well, where the CEOs of those companies, at a point in time, it's been over a decade for both of them now, you know, basically went to the people who were building the platforms that run their business and said, we will do it this way. There will be no option. And that is incredibly important. It's been an evolutionary path for both of those companies, the way they run their businesses. Google's a little bit different because Google just started as a web company, whereas Amazon and Microsoft are obviously in traditional businesses, and then they decided to go about doing it differently. So that's really the most important part is for executive leadership to make the commitment, make it clear that this cultural change is really, really important, and then find a bite-sized chunk that you can start with and make it real.
I had a long conversation, another podcast, with a friend of mine, Jeff Glennon, who's an Agile coach. And we were discussing the problems companies face where developers are where the rubber hits the road, business expects stuff to get done, they don't give the specs, developers get blamed. He says what you have to do is like what you're saying, you have to bring the executives in as part of this. They have to, from the top down, say, this is our goal, we're committed to it, we accept that maybe it's more expensive, that it's going to take longer. And that was the approach for, let's say, transitioning to Agile. What would be the approach for transitioning to what you're describing, getting buy-in from C-level?
It's a fairly easy conversation to have. The challenge that technology vendors have in general is they want to talk about technology. And as you have quite correctly pointed out, business leaders could care less. They said that my CIO is going to take care of that. Go talk to him. And then you get down into the whole how we do things here, or how that's not how we do things here. There are three business problems that need to be solved. How do we react to the market in a more timely manner? So I refer to that as agility. And most companies don't have it. The complexity of how their businesses work today. A lot of the technology that's deployed today that's too expensive and too complex is a reflection of the business processes that it's implementing. So you need to, you know, these two topics are key. These were actually the topics that the cloud conversation should have been about. And instead, we got sucked into the cost conversation. Why? Because cloud's an IT, and IT is a cost center. And, you know, infrastructure exists largely to run the applications that run the business. That's why it's there. if you're in the business of running infrastructure, then infrastructure is very important to you. But from a CEO or a COO, they don't care.
No.
It's a cost. It's a necessary cost. And so what you need to do is demonstrate the way that that infrastructure is adding value to the business. And that is making you more agile in the market and reducing the complexity of how you do your business. And if you've sold those two things to the business leadership, you'll get the buy-in and they will support the effort. You need to make sure that they understand it's a long journey. One of my very first Azure wins was with the a line of business CIO for a company that was consumer facing. It was actually one of Lowe's suppliers. This was the marketing department. They were putting a website, they had a website that backed up their brand. And the marketing department spent all of its time trying to figure out how to get the 50 million receivers of the Lowe's flyers that went out constantly with that URL in it to come to that website. Well, you've got tens of millions of flyers. If you come up with something compelling and they hit the three IIS servers that were standing behind that website was going to collapse. That was the business justification he had for moving into the cloud. He got upset halfway through the process because it was hard. Fortunately, I told him it was hard. And when I reminded him of that, but that the benefit he was getting from that hard work was going to make it all worth it, everything calmed down and we got through to implementation. And they're very happy with it. They wound up being a case study for Microsoft a few years ago. So that's really what you need to do. You need to focus on those three problems: agility, complexity, and cost, in that order. Your costs will come down when you do the other two things well. If you keep trying to find band-aids to try to solve particularly the cost problem, it becomes a gnarly mess, or it remains a gnarly mess, and your cost problem is not solved.
So again, it's all going back to buy-in.
Yes.
They have to be committed and understand. Any final notes before we wrap up, Mark?
No, I would summarize by saying that the industry accepted this distinction between public and private cloud that didn't exist, that there's still a tremendous amount of business value locked up in the entire concept of private cloud, and that enterprises, small, medium, and large, should give a serious look to how the private cloud can help their businesses going forward.
Mark Eisenberg, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you. Thank you.
The opening music was a return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was River Song by Piano Chocolate from the album Aquarelia.